Yeah, starting over. Exactly what the Edmonton Oilers just need to do. South Beach today. Go out there. Have some margaritas. Enjoy the sun.
Borrow some sunscreen from Gene.
Get back. Poor Gene Principe is like gone viral on social media for getting a little sun, but he comes by it naturally. Yeah. Okay. Then, of course, get the morning, get the skate in tomorrow, refresh. Rob Brown's joining us. 880 Ched in Edmonton, Oilers analyst. You can see him on Got Your Back podcast with the boys, Ryan Rashog, Jason Strudwick as well. Rob, I was asked this question on our radio station earlier today. How much of Game 3 for the Oilers is it just like, will it carry over? Will it defeat them? And I said, pros these days are able to shake things off quite remarkably. Is that true for these guys and like over the next 2 days that Game 4 is going to be a completely different animal than it was for Game 3?
Well, I think so. You just have to look at history. Last year, Florida Panthers won the first three games and were poised to sweep the Stanley Cup Finals. And they lose, 8-1 in Game 4? So if the momentum meant anything, that series should have been over in four games. Then the Oilers win three games in a row and dominate in those games. So if momentum means anything, they should have won Game 7. So momentum changes game to game, shift to shift. Probably easier to recover from a 6-1 shellacking than a double overtime loss, simply because in a double overtime loss or a goal late in the game, you think back to that one play that may have made a difference, and it just eats you alive. Hmm. In a 6-1 loss, there's nothing they can look back at and say one thing made a difference. They were bad, from their top players to their goaltending to their discipline to their special teams. It was just an off night for the team, something that they can flush and get back to trying to find their game for Game 4.
One of the things that I would say irked me a little bit from Paul Maurice's post-game comments was he was talking about the fact that what the Florida Panthers do isn't a plan, that we just go out there, we're playing our game. I mean, come on. They're dragging this team into the gutter. And the mistake, and you kind of alluded to it, the mistake the Oilers made, in my opinion, Rob, is that they followed him in and said, yeah, we can muck around here, and this is we'll try to play your game. Am I wrong to suggest that Maurice is full of it with that statement?
No, I think this statement is correct. I mean, that's how Florida plays. They don't go out and say, hey, let's go bump their goaltender or run over their goaltender or goad them into penalties. They just go out and play their style of hockey. That is their style. They're not sitting in the dressing room and said, okay, in the first period, I want you to go grab Connor every time you get. If that's our plan, we're going to grab Connor. Or let's, you know, go face wash Leon. They are a very physical team that plays close to the edge. If you watch the series against Carolina, the Carolina Hurricanes in Game 1 came out and tried to play Florida Panther hockey. They're like, we're going to go run the Panthers. And they tried. The first period, they dominated physically. But that's not how they're made. And as the series went on, they could not keep up to Florida in that style of game. And Florida took over and dominated the series. I think that in Games 1 and 2 in this series, the Oilers played their brand of hockey. But they were very physical, and it was a very even first two games. A bounce for the Florida Panthers gave them the win in Game 2. An unfortunate penalty by the Florida Panthers in Game 1 allowed the Oilers to score in the power play. But two even games. For some reason, in Game 3, it was the Edmonton Oilers that came unglued early. Mm-hmm. If you watch the very first goal of the game, Brad Marchand scores. Before that, on the faceoff, Leon wins the draw. And going to the net, he punched number 27 in the head and then elbowed him in the face just before the goal. And that was just kind of the tone that the Oilers had. Jake Walman, all night long, was looking for retribution every shift. mm-hmm. after whistles, before whistles. So it wasn't all the fans were in the call-in show just saying, well, Panthers play this way. The Oilers aren't doing it. Watch this game. The Oilers, right from the get-go, came out, and they did not play like Edmonton Oilers. They completely changed their game. They were slashing. They were cross-checking. All the things after the whistle, that plays into the Florida Panthers. Florida Panthers at that point are just smiling. We've gotten under their skin, and they took advantage of it. The Oilers are they're just as good as the Panthers. They probably have a better top-end skill. But in the first game, in that game last night, you didn't get to see it because of the penalties mm-hmm. and because the Oilers just looked for, they were looking for revenge in a series that is just getting going. So it just didn't make a whole lot of sense. The Oilers got completely away from the things that make them successful, and that is playing calm. Doesn't matter what you throw us. We don't like the refereeing. Doesn't matter. We'll play through it. We don't like the clutching and grabbing. Doesn't matter. We'll play through it. We fall behind early. It's okay. We're good enough to come back. That's what we've seen so far in the playoffs up until last night from the Oilers. And last night, they completely changed.
Rob Brown joining us, 880 Chet Analyst, Got Your Back podcast. Why? Why did they get sucked into that? Like, what was it that had them go, you know what? I want to take a shot. I'm going to take some cheap shots early. I'm going to skate around during introductions and anthems and all these things that were going on even pregame where you're like, what is happening with the Oilers
on the plane
going in? Yeah. Were they hangry?
Yeah, in all honesty, I don't know. Cause, and it's funny, in the leading into this finals, one of the keys for me, and we talked about it a lot, is how the Edmonton Oilers have taken over the identity of their coach, where Chris Knobloch, nothing seems to faze him. No matter where they are in the series, where they are in a game, he's always calm. And the Edmonton Oilers, who in the past, you know, before Knobloch took over, when they got frustrated, they usually took penalties. And you think back to some of the series, the slashing penalties behind the play that Leon would take, or the penalties that Kane would take, or when Desharnais was here, but they would, or Darnell Nurse, when they would get frustrated, they would take it out by taking silly penalties.
Mm-hmm.
When Knobloch took over, they became a much calmer team. They are one of the most disciplined teams in the National Hockey League. In the playoffs through the first three series, they didn't give the opposition any easy opportunities on the power play with lazy penalties or with retaliatory penalties. And that's just the way they played. It was almost like the Russians when they're the Red Army, that you could go out, you could never intimidate them. They were like robots on the ice. And I think that's what the Oilers were. But for some reason, the Florida Panthers have gotten under their skin, and now you've got the players shooting water at the opposition, punching after every whistle, slashing, going after players at the end of the game, talking in the press about the referees. These are things that you've never seen the Oilers do under Knobloch. So I do believe the Panthers have gotten under the skin of the Oilers. And now the Panthers, they don't have to be the initiators anymore. They're just standing back and smiling. And as everybody knows, when you're angry and the guy you're angry at is smiling at you, it just makes you angrier.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you saw last night in the game.
So much easier to handle when they're smiling back at you. Rob, you played for a lot of years, and Kane is, we keep mentioning him. What was he doing on the ice during the introduction? Like, was that some kind of an intimidation thing or something?
I honestly don't know. It's funny. I did notice it too. I have no idea. To be perfectly honest, no idea at all. It's not an intimidation thing. I think that you're in the National Hockey League. You're not intimidated by much. You're playing for the Florida Panthers or the Edmonton Oilers. Neither team can intimidate the other. Both teams have guys that can handle themselves. I mean, the stars of both teams are big and strong. So that is a question for Evander Kane. I don't know. But yeah, it was noticeable. I noticed it too, because as they're showing the beginning of the game, everyone's standing on the lines, he was still skating around out there.
So, Rob, another question from your career in hockey. How many times have you sprayed an opponent's bench or have been sprayed at by an opponent from their bench?
even if it was in a joking, you played with him in junior or something like that, because Jake Wallman got a $5,000 fine for giving an early shower to the Florida Panthers last night.
Never on either. The only thing that I've ever done is when I was in the minors one year, it was mad. I was frustrated, and I drank some water, and I threw the water bottle as hard as I could in front of me, and it when it hit, the lid came off, and all the water shot over my right shoulder, and that's where our assistant coach, Marty Howe, was, and absolutely drenched Marty Howe, and Marty was not happy with me. I got an earful for that one. So no, but again, to me, it also shows that how frustrated the Oilers were.
Yeah.
That, I mean, Wallman is standing there spraying the other team's bench. You and I both know that that doesn't bother a player. And they're laughing.
They were literally laughing at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you show that you're frustrated, it's like the pest that plays for the other team. When you retaliate, all right, he's like, yeah, I got you now. I'm in your head. I mean, the only one that Wallman pissed off there was the color guy that was standing between the benches. He started banging on the glass because his stuff was getting wet. So, again,
it's going to get electrocuted.
To me, it's just one of those things. Don't show them that you're frustrated. Don't. Because then they know they're winning the mental games. So, for me, game four is just coming out mentally strong. The Oilers are capable of winning this series. They're capable of winning game four. But they've got to do it on their terms. Play the way they're capable of playing. Connor McDavid said they haven't had their best game yet. Well, game four is when they need it.
Rob, quickly, we don't have a lot of time left. Skinner or Pickard for Thursday?
I'd start Skinner. I know that there's a lot of fans calling for Calvin Pickard. And yes, he was 6-0 in the playoffs, but he had an .880 save percentage. So it's not as though he was lights out. I think Calvin Pickard's a wonderful story. I think he's capable of coming in when needed. I think Skinner is the better of the two goalies. Now, having said all of that, Skinner's numbers in the finals aren't good enough. They need to be better. He's not going to be Bobrovsky. Bobrovsky's the best money goalie in the NHL today. 3 years in the finals proves that. Stanley Cup championship proves that. He makes $10 million a year for a reason. But they need Stuart Skinner, if that's the goalie, to give them a chance and give them a quality start. He was fine in game one and two. He was not good enough in game three.
I think they broke it down after the first or second period. Kelly or someone, the reads Bobrovsky was making last night, like he knew where the Oilers were putting the puck before I think the Oilers knew where they were putting their puck. Like he was
phenomenal
in the zone right now in net for the Panthers.
He was so good. And there were the Oilers were not even in the game last night, but there were four or five chances earlier in the game where Bobrovsky made great saves. Where, as you said, he read the play, backdoor to Draisaitl, over the other way for a one-timer. But you knew that it was his night, and there was a great shot of it. Bouchard walks into just below the tops of the circles. Corey Perry completely in front of the eyes of Bobrovsky, who was standing there like a shooter-tooter goalie. And Bouchard's shot hits the blocker without Bobrovsky even seeing it. It was like, okay, this is Bobrovsky's night.
Yeah.
Everything is going for him tonight. He is that good. Bobrovsky's that good. That's why the Oilers do not want to lose game four. You do not want to have three elimination games against a goaltender who's locked in, because you could be the better team, but that goalie can beat you in one of those three games.
Rob, we always appreciate you taking the time here in Saskatchewan. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon and game four on Thursday.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.
Thanks, that Rob. Is Rob Brown, 880 Chet Analyst, Got Your Back podcast, where you can find his work. Of course, one of the greatest goal scorers of his generation when he was playing junior back in the day, and of course, a great NHL career as well. Still to come on the Green Zone, we got to get to our grades. Mike Wilner is going to talk some Blue Jays baseball and the good and the bad news from Riders practice today with Britton Gray coming up at 4:05 on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone on this Tuesday afternoon. Of course, more coming up. Our top grades, our failing grades from last night's Game 3 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Of course, Green Zone Rider reporter Britton Gray at 4:05 to break down the news of the day. Some good news on AJ Ouellette and Roland Milligan being able to practice after clearing concussion protocol. Some bad news is that Kian Schaefer-Baker did not practice ahead of Saturday's game against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. But right now, we're going to talk some Blue Jays baseball with Mike Wilner, a Toronto Star, a columnist, as well as host of Deep Left Field podcast, joining us. It's been quite the turnaround over the last few weeks for the Toronto Blue Jays, trying to win their fifth straight series today in Game 2 of the series against St. Louis. But Mike, first off, thanks for joining us.
Oh, happy to be here. Thanks for having me, guys. Always love to get back out west. I miss talking to Saskatchewan every night like I used to.
Yeah, doing the post-game show, you probably got a few calls from Saskatchewan on those post-game shows as the Jays were airing on some rural stations back in the day, Mike.
All the time, and it was awesome.
But before we get to the Jays, I'm going to play you one highlight from last night.
And this one to center field. Denzel Clark on the move back after he stepped
Denzel Clark from Canada, Toronto. I know he did it against the Jays, then did it last night. Is that like the play of the year? Can we just book that one for play of the year in Major League Baseball, maybe all of sport for 2025?
I don't know if that beats Dalton Varsho falling down, rolling over, and still making
catches
back to the plate.
The ice cream cone.
Completely different thing. And that was an unbelievable catch. And it's so great to see the wider baseball world finally getting a chance to appreciate what we've known about Denzel Clark around here for a few years. I mean, he played for Team Canada at the World Baseball Classic in 2023 when he was still an A-ball. The speed, the defense is unbelievable. And it's just such a joy to see, and that absolutely last night in Anaheim was one of the best catches I've ever seen.
Mike, the Jays have won their last 10 of 12, third in the AL East, and they're holding down the second wild card spot right now. There's a lot of baseball to play yet for the year. But what, in your opinion, has led to the turnaround? Because it was a bit of a bumpy start for the Jays.
And you're being kind. It was terrible. Like it was a good start, and then there was a terrible middle.
Yeah,
the Jays. And I, you know, I don't want to be too much of a cynic, but what led to the turnaround is Anthony Santander and Andrés Giménez not being in the lineup. They were killing them for 6 weeks, and you know. Them both getting hurt. Well, first, Giménez getting hurt gave the Blue Jays an opportunity to get Addison Barger into the lineup, and he has blossomed, starting to come down to earth a tiny little bit now that he's seeing a lot fewer fastballs, but it certainly appears as though the kid can hit. And the fact that he would not have had a chance to play had Andrés Giménez not gotten hurt. Ernie Clement, who has done a fine job. Certainly, I mean, he had a month there where he was out of his skull, but still a better offensive player than Giménez has been in 3 years, and almost as good defensively. You get him in the lineup. And now with Santander hurt, they have a chance to really have Nathan Lucas in there all the time also, who's done a wonderful job. So really, you know, what is astonishing to me is the Blue Jays made four major acquisitions in the offseason. Max Scherzer, Jimmy Garcia, Andrés Giménez, and Anthony Santander. They were playing their best baseball of the season when all four of them were on the injured list. Now Giménez is back, but he hasn't been playing every day, but he's pitched in with a couple of hits here and there, and he's played his trademark incredible defense. But, you know, you can't win games nothing-nothing. As good as Giménez is, he's not going to be able to stop every ball that's hit on the right side. You got to have a little offense, and that's what those injuries have allowed them to inject a little offense, and all of a sudden, here you go.
Okay, I'm curious about Addison Barger a little bit here. Of course, it was end of May, early June. He strung four home run games with home runs. Then he hit another one the other time. Slowed down a bit, but what have you seen from Addison Barger from, you know, day one of this season when he got in the lineup to what we are seeing from him now, contributing almost on a nightly basis?
Well, I mean, like I said, it's starting to slow down because he's starting to see a lot more spin. Pitchers are understanding that if you throw him a first pitch fastball, he might hit it 500 feet. And so that kind of thing isn't happening quite as often as it was before. But look, Addison Barger didn't make the team. So when you're talking about day one of spring training, he wasn't there day one or day one of the season. He wasn't there day one of the season. He didn't make the team out of spring training. He was pretty rough last year, though okay in September when he got some regular playing time, but there's still a lot of holes in his game and a lot of holes in his swing. What I've seen now is someone who's really aggressive on the fastball, and it is working like a charm for him, and someone who's been playing terrific defense. Throwing arm is ridiculous and generally so accurate at third base, and you can put him in the outfield as well, which is why Andrés Giménez coming back hasn't meant that both he and Clement are losing playing time, especially with Santander hurt. You need to have that other body there. But, you know, it's just adjusting to the league, having the league adjust back to him. Now we see if he can adjust back to the adjustment that they're making to try to get him out. So the next few weeks are going to be really interesting.
Mike, we got to have the standard Vladdy question. Is he living up to his $500 million contract extension from April, in your opinion?
Can anybody live up to that kind of money? You know,
I could try.
Of course he's not. But that's okay. They had to do it anyway. And you know, if it was me making that call, I mean, well, I would have done it 3 years ago and saved a few hundred million dollars. But when it got to the point in April, you had to do it. You absolutely had to do it. You could not have this guy who, born and bred a Blue Jay, who wants to play here. You can't let him walk. And they got him for 2/3 of the money that Juan Soto got. Really, you know, and we're seeing it with Santander too, and we've seen it with so many people over the years. The first year of a big contract, you're generally not yourself, right? You feel the weight of it. You feel the expectations. You try to be someone else. But the truth of the matter is, you know, no matter who you are and no matter how much money you get, it doesn't change the player that you are. You don't become this incredible guy who's going to hit a home run every time he stands in just because you're getting a lot of money. Now, Vladdy is still second on the team in home runs, George Springer. He had a 34-game on-base streak. We haven't seen quite as much thump, and that electricity isn't there right now where, you know, whenever he comes to the plate, you think something special is going to happen like it was in 2021 and like it was the last half of last year. But it's in there and it'll come out. And at the end of the year, you know, we're going to say, you know, is Vladdy living up to the contract? But he'll probably be top three first baseman offensively in the game. He's going to be the Blue Jays home run and RBI leader. He's going to have an OPS over 850. And, you know, he's just going to have this steady march towards Hall of Fame numbers and leading the Blue Jays in every offensive category in club history, except probably stolen bases by the time he's done. So, you know, if you expected, okay, he got the money, now he's going to hit 50 home runs every year. I mean, that doesn't happen with anybody.
Mike Wilner joining us, a Toronto Star baseball columnist, writer, as well as host of Deep Left Field podcast. I'm a big believer in baseball, as you just mentioned with Vladdy. Things kind of come back to the mean or the average. The Blue Jays, we mentioned it, they've won 10 of their last 12. Before this stretch, they were below 500. Where do you think their average is this season? Are they a 545 team? Are they a 500 team? Are they what we saw in that kind of late April, May? What do you think, Mike, we're going to see as the sustained Blue Jays for the rest of the year?
I mean, I think it's going to be roller coastery. You know, this team despite the fact that it has the fifth highest payroll in the game, and it's a huge indictment of Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, no matter how well they're playing now. The fact that this is the fifth highest payroll in the game, and they're going to have to be tooth and nail for a playoff spot all season long, it shouldn't be happening. You know, you spend that kind of money, you should be a comfortable playoff team. But I've said for decades now, I think, a team is never as bad as it looks when it's playing its worst, and never as good as it looks when it's playing its best. We're not even a month removed from people saying they're going to lose 100 games this season. And now that they've won 10 of 12 and everything's going well, we think, a lot of people think everything's fine. It's still a team that's not as good as it should be. There are still three or four major holes offensively. They only have 60% of a major league starting rotation right now. So there are problems. And there's going to be a run where they lose 7 of 8. And there's going to be a run where, you know, like they did 3 weeks ago in Tampa and Texas, they score, or not even 3 weeks ago, they score 6 runs in 6 games. It's a team that should be in the playoffs. I said at the beginning of the season, I thought this was a playoff team. I don't think it's a 90-win team. I think I said they could win anywhere from 75 to 95, which is like covering a lot of bases there. But that's how wonky things can go and how great things can go. I think when it's over, we're going to see a team that is in the playoffs as a wild card. I don't know that they'll host a game. I think comfortably above 500, like somewhere between 84 and 87 wins, I think, mm-hmm. is where they wind up.
Mike, this morning in the Green Zone Lounge, Jamie and I, we found out we were going to get you on the show. Very excited. And like we do with a lot of our guests, we go and take a look at what they're doing on social media, do a little stalking. And I got to say, Mike, Jamie and I, and maybe we're a little tired, and you know, we were drinking last night with the hockey game. I read your Twitter bio, and oh my goodness, I just about had a seizure. I laughed so hard.
Now Mike is on Blue Sky.
You're on Blue Sky. So I just wanted to give you some kudos.
I don't remember what's on the Twitter bio. I haven't posted on Twitter since Elon Musk did his Nazi salute. That was the last straw for me. But the people who I hear are still on there. It's like, I don't know, 30% bots, 30% Nazis, and 40% just people telling you you're a soy boy or whatever. So it's really not worth being there anymore. But I do encourage everyone to follow me on Blue Sky. And I guess now I have to go back and look at that Twitter bio because I have no idea what it says.
Well, it's beautiful.
But I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It's beautiful, Mike. It made our day. Thank you.
When he read it, I'm like, are you sure you're on Mike Wilner's account? He's like, I'm pretty sure that he hasn't posted. And I was like, oh, no, yeah, Wilnerness. That's him for sure. Yeah. Okay. You and our colleague, Daryl Davis, longtime Leader Post columnist, writer, is on our game day. He's also a strictly Blue Sky Now guy now as well, on social media. And is it better over there, by the way?
There are way fewer Nazis, I'll tell you that.
Mike, appreciate your time. Always appreciate your stuff on the Toronto Star Deep Left Field podcast.
Thanks, Mike.
And can't wait to have you back again a little later on this season.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
That is Mike Wilner. Wilderness Blue Skies, where you can find his stuff. Deep Left Field Podcast, Toronto Star.
Go check him out on Twitter too. Just he hasn't been on there for a long time, but the account still exists. So,
yes.
For a good chuckle.
And the Jays are hot right now. Won 10 of their last 12, trying to win their fifth straight series with the St. Louis Cardinals. Game 2 tonight after winning in extras last night. Coming up here on the Green Zone, Britton Gray is going to slide in to talk us more about the Riders practice today. They're back at it after a few days off, and some good news when it comes to some of their best players. That's 405 on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Baby, baby, I want
Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone. You can catch us Saturday. It's a full-on Saturday night main event. Boston Pizza, Acre 21 location in Regina. That's where we're doing the pregame show from 3 to 5.
We got the VIP table
to give away tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
With a $100 gift card.
You get to sit next to the Green Zone staff, too. We're trying to sell it. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of people there. Yeah,
if you get the VIP table, you get the $100.
Just talk to us.
Yeah.
And $100.
Don't worry about what the next table next to you is. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be me, Belton, Daryl, and Walker watching football. The Riders at 5, the Oilers at 6. It'll be Acre 21 location, Boston Pizza in Regina on Saturday. Again, we're giving away that VIP table and the gift card tomorrow on the Green Zone.